Hello, everyone, and welcome in to the Youth Hoops Pod presented by Pro Skills Basketball. Today, we have a fun conversation coming your way about the top three skills that youth basketball players should work on. In order to determine what those three skills are, we have special guest Dan Decker joining the podcast today. Dan is now the official PSB San Diego director, as we have just launched PSB San Diego. Dan is also a 1,000-point scorer in both high school and college, and has many years of experience being both an athletic director and an assistant coach at the college basketball level. Today, we're going to jump into the top three skills that youth players should focus on, being dribble, pass, and shoot. Yes, it's just that simple. Or is it just that simple? Tune into the rest of the conversation to find out. We hope you enjoy. So Dan, we're really pumped to have you here on the Youth Hoops Pod today. My name's Christian Barber. I'm the host of the podcast. For our audience coming back in, they know my voice. They know what they're here for. But Dan, they've yet to hear from you. They've yet to meet you. So Dan Decker is actually our PSB San Diego director. So congrats, Dan, because at the time of us recording this, we just announced those cities 2 days ago. I don't know, the days are starting to run together, but just announced these new cities. So it is official now. The world knows of you and the takeover you're about to take down into San Diego. So Dan, we're really pumped to have you on the podcast, man. Welcome in.
Yeah, Christian, no, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here. I've been listening to the last couple episodes, listening to the Bitcoin episode. It's something that I don't know a whole lot about. So no, I'm excited to be here and be a part of it.
I love it. We were just chatting it up about the Bitcoin there before. Anyone who has not listened, go check out the Bitcoin and Basketball Pod. It's very, very intriguing. But Dan, we are going to try to do what the Bitcoin Pod is trying to do and educate people on a topic. And maybe people come in here today and don't know much about the topic we're speaking on. And that topic is the top three skills that youth players should focus on. So obviously we both work for a youth basketball organization. We do a lot in youth basketball. So we feel like we know what we're talking about, but maybe people out there are like, how are you one to know, you know? So Dan, give us a little background about how you got here and why your expertise is prevalent in the experiences you have had that have led to our conversation today.
Yeah. So to be honest with you, I really can't take credit for the three skills that we're gonna be talking about. And, you know, to give a little insight, it's gonna be dribble, pass, shoot, right? And so that's that's not anything groundbreaking. And I'll kind of take you through how I got to that point. But really, when I was a young player, in about eighth grade is when I decided that I wanted to be a great basketball player. And before that, I was actually a lot more interested in baseball. And around eighth grade, I quit the travel baseball team that I was a part of. And my friends kind of looked at me and they said, you know, Dan, you're not as good at basketball. Why don't you just stick with baseball? But I was just really passionate about basketball. I enjoy the game. There's something about the intensity of it. You know, baseball is just a little bit slower for me. You know, no disrespect to people who like baseball more. But yeah, I just kind of fell in love with the game of basketball. And so in eighth grade, like going into my freshman or even my eighth grade summer and then going into my freshman summer, is where I really dedicated a lot of time to my own personal development in the game of basketball. And so, you know, that started, you know, my own individual training and, you know, very basic stuff. And, you know, to be honest with you, I wish I had a little bit more direction when I was growing up. And so that's what I hope to be able to provide for players now with all the experience that I have, you know, with myself and, you know, working on different things. But yeah, so then I went to a smaller high school in Central New Jersey. It's in a bigger conference. So, you know, some players who have played in that conference that people might know is, you know, Carl Towns, Greater Middlesex, GMC Conference, Greater Middlesex Conference in Central Jersey, Wade Baldwin, who both played at St. Joe's. You know, so players like that are the types of players that played in the conference. And I was fortunate enough to play for a really good high school coach who helped me develop my skills. And I ended up being a 1,000-point scorer at the high school level and was able to take that into a position where I got a couple different offers from Division III schools. There were some Division II schools that were interested, and ultimately I decided I wanted to go to a school where I'd be able to play right away. And so I was fortunate enough to be a four-year starter at the college I went to, also a 1,000-point scorer at the college I went to.
What college is that?
So I went to Clark Summit University.
Nice.
So that's in Northeast Pennsylvania. And so I was there for 4 years, made some great friends. Didn't necessarily have the most successful last 2 years, my junior and senior year, but definitely learned a lot from those experiences. And then I springboarded that into an athletic director position, where I worked pretty much mostly with the boys basketball team. It's a really interesting situation, but the head of school is actually the head basketball coach at that school, and he's done a great job building the program. And then from there, I was just like, man, I need to get involved in college basketball. And so then the last 2 years I spent as the graduate assistant at Madonna University. So I served as an assistant coach for the varsity team, and served as the head coach for what we call the reserve team there. And that's really where I got to the point where, all right, what are the most three important skills? And the head coach that I work for, Noel Emenheiser, he's just a great basketball mind. And he's definitely someone, he coaches at an NAIA school. He could be at, in my opinion, he could be at any school, you know, mid-major, Division I. He has his brother-in-law is the head assistant at Alabama. And Noel just has a great basketball mind. And he kind of simplified it for me. And he's like, Dan, what we're looking for in players from Madonna, we want players who can dribble, pass, and shoot. And if they could do that, they're a playmaker, and they're going to be able to make plays for us and for each other on the team. And we're not just reliant on them having to rely on someone else to create opportunities for them. So that's where I know that was kind of a long-winded way to get to dribble, pass, shoot. But again, I can't take credit for, you know, why I think those are the most important. But that's kind of how I got to the point where I'm at now, where, hey, these are just the most important skills.
Yeah, no, I love that, Dan. And there, gosh, there's so much that we could dig into there. I love you talking about you wish you had the direction that now you're trying to provide when you were a younger player. And obviously, you got to compete against a lot of good players, and you put that ball in the bucket quite a few times. So I think you knew how to dribble, pass, and shoot. Maybe not pass, I don't know. But dribble and shoot, it sounds like you had figured out. So,
I was going to say, I probably have some high school teammates who said I could have done a better job passing.
Yeah. I'm infamously known for not passing. I just shoot. None of the other things. So yeah. I'm with you there. So I love it, Dan. So we're here today talking about the top three skills that youth players should focus on. Obviously, there's more than just dribbling, passing, and shooting, being a good teammate. So many things we talk about here at PSB, but simply those skills, those actual things you can actively go work on in a gym. So Dan, let's jump into it a little bit. You said dribble, pass, shoot. Seems basic. Not exactly. The concept of it is yes, but within each of those, there are, goodness gracious, dribble could be a whole podcast episode, pass could be a whole episode, shoot could be a whole episode, but let's try to run through them quickly. So when you were going and scouting and looking for other players, you were looking for these three tiers of things, correct? Like this was the baseline. You got to be able to dribble, pass, shoot to be a college basketball player.
Exactly. Yep. Like my coach said, he's like, hey, when you're looking for players, we want players who can do all three things. And that really fit into our system, but I do believe that fits into any system.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So even, you know, maybe college basketball was too high of a thing. Even if you just want to be a successful basketball player at any level, dribbling, passing, and shooting is important. Let's dive in there to dribble. Number one, dribble. When you look at a player and you think about ball handling and you think about dribbling, Why is dribbling and being able to handle the ball so important, whether you're a big or a guard?
Yeah, so when it comes to being a playmaker, you got to be able, and the way I see it is you got to be able to get into the paint to create opportunities, right? And it's not just about your defender. If you're only ever guarded by your defender, you're not going to be able to create a play. You got to be able to get by your defender. And if you don't have adequate ball handling skills, you know, that's going to be tough. And, you know, I think even when I think about ball handling and what it takes to become a great ball handler. Sorry, I might be jumping the gun here a little bit, but just something that I found, and I know Christian, you train quite a few players as well. And Christian, I'm not sure if you feel the same way, but there's some players where when you're going through ball handling drills, they're great at going through ball handling drills, right? And they could do the two ball stuff, you know, they could pound it high, they could pound it low, they could go quick, they could do crossovers. And then for some reason, like there's some players where it doesn't necessarily translate, like those stationary drills, it doesn't necessarily translate into gameplay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. 100%. 100%.
And I've always been curious about that because growing up, like I was always given a lot of stationary ball handling drills. And there was just times where I didn't feel like for me, it translated. And so something that I think is important for players to understand as they look at their own player development is that if you're really good at those like stationary ball handling, the hard pound drills, you might want to work on more what I call like flow drills, right? Where you're working on more movements and getting fluidity and working on that change of pace, change of direction, right? Because a lot of being a great ball handler isn't just how you handle the basketball, but it's about being able to get by your defender. And I think Kobe Bryant really said it best when he was talking about like being a great ball handler isn't about being able to dribble a lot, but it's about being able to use the least amount of dribbles to get by your defender. So it's much more than just handling the basketball. It's about being able to get by a defender and being able to have flow and change of direction, change of speed is huge aspects of that.
I love that. And Dan, what I think, what I'm getting from what you're saying, and obviously I think we're both going to be expressing our kind of training kind of beliefs and views here. Dan, for the audience out there, I know Dan fairly well. We did play a little pickup together, but we don't know each other's training philosophy. So this is going to be a good, relatively open discussion. What it sounds like you're saying to me with the dribbling is there are more kind of like efficient or applicable ways to train. And I'm big on this, Dan. I'm not a big cone user. I see their purpose, but you'll never see a cone on a court. So I'm just kind of like, how can I get you in a really game situation, specific situation? So I'm sure you agree the two ball ball handling and stuff will help. Like your hands are getting stronger. They're getting used to the ball. But if you really want to get into what is going to translate to what you're doing on the floor, I couldn't agree more. And trying to do more active drills and moving around the court and learning how to use your body with your ball handling and how to angle your hips on certain ball handling moves. It's a lot more than just, you know, how many 2 pound between the leg, two ball dribbles you can do in 30 seconds. So I like you bringing up Kobe there and using the least amount of dribbles, actually. Like, how efficient can you be with one or two dribbles with one really good crossover to create the space instead of needing five or six? Where are you kind of on the topic of, I've heard ball handling, because dribbling, ball handling, Dan, I've heard ball handling kind of expanded upon the release of the ball to the floor. Like, ball handling is how you collect the ball. It's how you raise the ball up into your shot. Where do those things come into play when you think about handling the basketball?
Yeah, no, I think, and even kind of like what you were saying and kind of what I was hitting at, is like the ball handling is much more than just dribbling, right? Because
exactly,
like you said, it's dribbling and then there's ball handling and being able to get by a defender. So no, I definitely agree. And the better you handle the ball, like, the better you're going to be able to get into your shot, right? Because, you know, especially now, like, a lot of the game is predicated on you being able to get your shot off with, like, off the dribble. And again, with the least amount of dribbles possible. So no, I definitely agree with that statement. I really like, I've not necessarily heard about that as much with ball handling going to your shot, but that does make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's something, you know, you said these top three things aren't from you. You picked these up from someone else. Same here. Everything we've done is because someone else smarter kind of passed it down. And I worked with a really, really good trainer who actually worked with Steph a good bit. And he talked about how Steph apparently talks about the concept of ball handling being more than just the dribbling. It's the shot pocket, how you collect the ball, how you pick up the ball from those dribbles. You're still handling the basketball. So I think we're both on the same page that's a more encompassing thing than just going and sitting and doing stationary ball handling. Players out there, work on those kind of flow drills, use these dribbles on the move. And Dan, I'm actually a big fan of reactionary work. So whether you have a trainer or a buddy who can kind of like give you reads where you're driving one direction and maybe they reach and you learn on how to counter that and make a crossover, or maybe they don't reach and you just hit it in and out and keep attacking that way. I think just trying to get it as game specific as possible can be really helpful when it comes to ball handling.
Yeah. And if you don't mind me kind of touching on that one more time, two things, if you don't mind. The first, not as much in relation to that statement you just made, but I think it's important for players to understand where they need to improve, right? So some players have like really good fluidity, but need to work on like a little bit stronger of a handle. And so you might need to do more of that stationary two ball stuff. But if you're really good at the two ball stuff and you need fluidity, you got to understand where you're at as a player. And when it comes to the reactionary stuff that you're just talking about, no, I think it's very important to take the skills you're training and then put them more in a live situation, right? Because you need to have the ability to train. And something that really solidified that thought in my mind this summer is I started doing some MMA training. And so I started taking some Brazilian jiu-jitsu classes, and I had never done that before in my life. And so they would do something very similar in the classes I would take. So we would learn a skill, right? So we'd come in, just like anything else, you'd go, you'd do your warm up, and then they would teach us a skill, right? And you'd go through and kind of at a slower pace. And then as you get more comfortable, you know, try to do it faster. And then what you would do after about like the 15 minutes of you training it is they'd put you in like a live competition, right? So they call it like a roll in jiu-jitsu. And so you would roll with someone and you would start in the position that you were just working on. So you have, so right away, right after you do the training, you're going in a live situation where you get to work on it and train it, because it's not always going to be the same. It's not always easy as it is as when you're training it. And so I think it's important in the same way for basketball, like train the skill. And after you do it, you got to put it more in a live situation so that you get you know, a little more comfortable what it feels like going at more of a game speed, game competition.
Yeah, absolutely. We're clearly dead in line on that. So I think the takeaway there is dribbling, ball handling, a huge skill to focus on. Work on, you know, playing the game. I think there is a time and place for those stationary dribbles, but that can't be it. You've got to learn how to actually take that on the move. Now, Dan, kind of segueing into number two here, we've got passing, which, you know, we could argue that's a little bit of ball handling. That's you handling the ball and having the command over the basketball to make different types of passes, one hand passes, chest passes, bounce passes, given the circumstance you're in. But when I think about passing, Dan, it's like, how do you work on passing by yourself? That's a hard thing.
Yeah, no. So, and even Christian, as we were talking, I know we were kind of messaging back and forth a little bit about, you know, the topic of what we're going to be talking about. And something that I think that you talked about in our discussion prior is you talked about footwork. And so my view on passing wouldn't be like the way, how do you become a great passer? It's not necessarily that you do a bunch of passing drills. Like, sure, yeah, you could do a couple, you know, that might be helpful. But ultimately, the two things that I believe help you be a great passer is the first is just playing under control. And so, as well as my work with Pro Skills Basketball, I also work seasonally with PGC Basketball, so Point Guard College. And what we do is, you know, we're not really into the club teams. It's more just camps and clinics in the summertime is where we do most of our stuff. And then some camps and clinic in the fall on weekends. And something that we preach a lot, and even our coaches at Madonna, where I was previously at the last 2 years, is we talk about players being in control. And a great way to do that is playing off of 2 feet, right? Because I think a lot of players, when they go up, we're just taught, you know, just kind of go off 1 foot all the time. And, you know, one of the issues that, you know, I found for myself as a smaller, shorter player is going off 1 foot is I'm very limited, right? And it's a lot easier for defenders to time and block shots. And so, you know, I found that playing off of 2 feet just gave me way more options. And it also helped me play more in control. And when you're playing more in control, it's going to help you make better decisions, right? And generally, you know, one aspect of better decision making is making better passes. And so I think a big aspect of that is playing off of 2 feet and what comes along with that. So the second point, so playing more control. And then the second one is your footwork, right? So if you're playing off of 2 feet and you're on the ground a little bit more, it's like, all right, now that's a good opportunity for you to work on your footwork so that you're making the proper read based on what off the defense is giving you.
I think it's amazing that we're talking about passing and you're bringing it back to the feet. Honestly, it's cool to hear that. You know, because right away when I think passing, you know, I think of, you know, Steph Curry coming off a pick and roll behind his back, bounce pass, like just being able to do all these different kind of crazy passes, given the scenario you're in. And I'm not encouraging any young player out there to go do that for the record. He's Steph Curry for a reason. And that's like one of the most infamous turnovers he's ever had is that kind of behind the back pass on the pick and roll. But that's where my mind went to is like, I want to get better as a passer. I should learn how to make passes over my head and behind my back. And you're saying, no, actually, to be a better passer, it's almost like slow down, be under control, and just make the smart pass. The best pass is the one that's not a turnover that exactly, gets to the other teammate. So if you set your feet right and you're under control, you're not putting yourself in bad positions, passing should then become an easy thing to do in reality, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it does get to a point, and I do think that there is a place, not a whole lot of time, but where you do want to work on those passes. And so something, you know, that you'll see a lot of NBA players use, like Jamal Murray does a great job of this. When he comes off ball screens, he'll kind of drag out the ball screen, and it takes a lot more time to stop, pivot, and make the pass, right? So you'll see a lot of those behind the back passes. But again, that's a skill that I'd imagine that Jamal Murray is training, you know, hundreds of thousands of times before he uses it in a game situation. So there's a time and a place for it. But yeah, I do believe, you know, a lot more, like you said, you said it probably best, is just about making sure it's not a turnover.
It's just my dad, you know, I always wanted a nicer car in college. And he was like, dude, this gets you from A to B. Just get from A to B. Like, as long as it gets from A to B, it's a car. It works. So I think that could kind of be the same idea here. And I like that, dude, because that really was not, you know, my intention. Again, for the audience out there, like, Dan and I have not sat down and had dinner over our basketball philosophies. We were discussing the topic here, and clearly he's a basketball mind and has done a lot of player development. And we were talking dribble pass shoot. And my thought on pass was kind of some of those funkier passes. And you kind of checked me good in my tracks there. And I couldn't agree more with you. That's awesome to think about the footwork and setting yourself up and just ultimately just players try to play under control, try to avoid those turnovers, you know, a chest pass to a catch and shoot three. is worth 3 points just as much as a, you know, between the legs or off the elbow, white chocolate pass is worth three. It's all the same. Yeah. So I really like that there. Yeah. Any other thoughts on passing or things for young players to think about, Dan?
Yeah, I think the one last thing. And so I got this concept from the high school coach who was the coach at McKeel Christian Academy, a great high school coach. He won a state championship my first year there. So it was awesome to be a part of that and see. And so something that he actually used was called SOCS, right? So SOCS stands for Scoring Opportunities Created. And I think a lot of times players get so kind of concentrated on an assist, right? And, oh, like how many assists did you get? And so what he did is, all right, it doesn't matter how many assists you had, but how many scoring opportunities did you create for teammates, right? And so, you know, someone might go back and look at the box score and like, oh, like I didn't really do a great job being a playmaker this last game because I only had, you know, two assists, right? But then coach would actually go through the film. He's like, yeah, you had two assists, but you had like 8 scoring opportunities that you created for other teammates. And yeah, maybe they just didn't finish. And so even though you would have had 2 today, you know, maybe with the same amount of passes tomorrow, you would have had 6 or 7 assists. So I think it's important for players to understand, like, it's not just about having the assist, but it's about setting up, like using your ball handling, using your passing to create good opportunities for teammates. And ultimately, you know, once that ball leaves your hand, it's not your decision, not necessarily even the decision of the person who's shooting. It's just, you know, whether or not the ball goes in the basket or if you created a good opportunity for them to drive and create now for another teammate.
I love that, Dan. And that point right there is great for players. If you are out there listening, that is awesome. If you can truly get in an unselfish mindset where you can recognize, maybe I didn't get an assist, but I was a part of the reason we got that bucket, even if it was like a hockey assist or whatever, right? So that's great for players, but I really like that for coaches, actually, Dan, for coaches to think about, because that to me sounds like it would better motivate or reward players for making that smart play. Even though they know they're not getting an assist, they know their coach is aware that they are doing the right thing. And I almost feel like that would foster an environment of moving the ball more.
Yeah. And so again, Coach Chad Bowman is the one who I stole that from. He still is the head high school coach at McKeel, and he's been there, I think it's about 25 years now. So he's built a phenomenal program starting from like a really small school, not very good. And, you know, now to like a powerhouse in that area. And so, yeah, no, it was amazing how when he brought that, and I don't know exactly when he started doing that, but I can remember I was there when he did it and he was talking to me about it, talking about SOCS. And it was funny how, you know, I'd go to practice and I'd hear players talking, be like, oh yeah, like I had 10 SOCS yesterday, right? And they were super pumped about it. And so it created like this change in the culture of it wasn't even about them scoring. They almost wanted more SOCS than they did, you know, points in the box score. And no, so I think it's a great concept for coaches. And actually, I brought that concept and brought it to my head coach at Madonna, Noel, the last 2 years. And I was like, hey, you know, this might be a great opportunity, especially when we're focusing on dribble, pass, shoot, you know, with our players and being playmakers. You know, maybe SOCS is something that you might find interesting. And so we ended up using it last year. I'm not sure if they're still using it this year or not. I haven't asked them. But yeah, I think it's a great way to kind of build culture and help players understand, like, hey, you may not feel like you're doing a lot, but if actually we look at the stats, you are doing a lot more than what you think.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a goodness. I hope people are out there listening to that one right there. SOCS, take it with you, run with it.
Right.
Well, hey, all right, dribble, pass. We've knocked them both out. They're both, you know, they're simple at the surface level, but goodness, we've already gone down a rabbit hole in both of them. And there's so much more to both of those skills.
Sure.
But our third one here is shoot, dribble, pass, shoot. You know, this is the one everybody wants. Everybody wants to be able to make the long jump shot. Everybody wants to be able to shoot the ball. Dan, the reason I love a good jump shot, I tell people all the time, there is no magic button to a good jump shot. No magic button. There is one formula to knock down shots, and it is simply to attempt them over and 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 over again, right? There's a lot of mechanics we can get into here, but at the end of the day, I always tell people, Dan, there's no picture perfect jump shot. I don't really believe it, because Klay Thompson's shot looks a little different than Steph's, and Steph's looks a little different than Dame's. And there are common themes, holding a high follow through, setting your feet, but everybody's got kind of their own little quirk. The number one most consistent theme amongst great shooters, I'm sure if you looked at the top 10 best shooters in the NBA all time, every single one of them gets so many shots up. They can just repeat their motion consistently. It's not that they can repeat some picture perfect beef motion consistently. It's that they can consistently go back to what their jump shot is.
Yeah, no, I really can't agree more. And I know even just as we were talking previously, like, oh, like, do you have any like specific shot mechanics? And like for me, just like you just said, Klay Thompson's shot looks a lot different than Kevin Durant's shot. It looks a lot different than how Larry Bird used to shoot. It looks a lot different from how Steph Curry now shoots. But they're all great shooters, right? And you know what you were just saying is it's just all about the repetition. And the very first time I can remember hearing this is my high school coach, Chris Hobbs, who's just a great leader in general. And I remember him talking about a player that was formerly in the program. And he's like, hey guys, you want to know the secret? Do you want to know why Tommy Wasich was such a great shooter? He says he was a great shooter because he just put up more shots in the summertime than everyone else, right? So it's all about the repetition. And I do think, you know, although the repetition is important, it's important to understand that you're getting reps at the right type of shots, right? And so I think when it comes to shooting, like it's a very simple thing to be a great shooter, but it's not necessarily easy, right? And I think this is a lot like shooting more than anything else, is where players can really use direction and how to become a great shooter, right? Because I think, you know, a lot of players will just go out and just start shooting around and they don't have anything specific that they're doing. And so what I would say, you know, when it comes to shooting and my personal philosophy and, you know, when I train kids and, you know, when I work with even teams of younger ages and even at like the middle school age, like when I was an athletic director, we didn't have a middle school basketball coach. And I'm like, all right, I'll do it. Like I'll coach middle school basketball. I love it. And so, you know, what I'd focus on with them and what I focus on with, you know, players really starting out is you got to become a great catch and shoot shooter, just stationary. You have to become great at that first, right? And before even being great at catch and shoot three, you got to be great at like catch and shoot from 15 feet. And it's kind of like if you're building a house, like if you build a house, you generally start from the bottom and work your way up. And if you're trying, you know, if you're starting out and you're working on your step back shot, you're kind of building the roof first. And yeah, maybe eventually you'll be able to build the house like after you go back and then work on the foundation. But it's going to take you a lot longer to get there than if you start with the base and built up from there. And so it's really, you know, I think, hey, become a great catch and shoot shooter from 15 feet. Once you're great at that, once you can consistently knock down 7 out of 10, you know, so you're shooting, you know, let's say you shoot in a week 500 shots and you're making 70% of those shots. Great. All right. Hey, maybe now you want to work on, you know, moving back a little bit and become a great catch and shoot 3-point shooter. That's something that there's a former PGC director who she received a scholarship to Stanford, and the Stanford coach, when she was getting recruited, that's what she told her. She's like, hey, become a great catch and shoot shooter because although where you're playing right now, you're able to go off the dribble and all that, we have players that are above you, and so you got to be great at this first before you can get to the next level of it.
I love that. And I think that provides a good framework for maybe if there's a kid out there listening, or a parent out there listening with a child and they're like, where do I begin? You know, I want to become a better shooter. Where do I begin? Start there. Be able to knock down a simple shot. But Dan, like you said, you can't, I don't want it to get misconstrued. I'm saying that the key is to get a lot of shots up, but you can't just go, if you're shooting a bunch of really bad shots, you ain't gonna get better, I promise. Like there are mechanics that matter. There are footwork that matters. What are some of the major things that stick out to you in a good jump shot?
I think it kind of starts with the bottom, and a similar way I talked to you about with the house, it starts with the bottom and kind of works its way up. And
100%.
so one of the things, and actually I had not heard of this until about like 2 months ago, but it made so much sense when it said it. And I was watching a video and it was Klay Thompson talking about shooting, and he talks about how when you shoot, it should be like a reverse waterfall, right? So if you think about a waterfall, it just kind of like flows down nice and smooth, right? And the same thing, that's how you want your shot to be. I know, I'm sure you've seen it, and coaches, you know, around the country and around the world have seen it, where you have someone's shot and just kind of looks really choppy and rigid, right? But you want to
The
work and try to get
hitch,
like
people call it
one,
the
yeah,
hitch in the shot.
you get like the hitches in. And sure, there's, you know, some shooters who still do a good job at that because they've gotten so many reps. But you know, I think, you know, you want one fluid motion. Something else actually that I think is, and this is a little bit controversial, less controversial now than it would have been about 5 years ago. But I think a lot of times there's too much focus on pointing 10 toes to the rim.
Dude, that's crazy. That's crazy. As you're talking in my mind, I'm like, he's gonna say 10 toes, 10 toes, because I'm so on your on board with you. Keep going, keep going.
So, you know, and it I had coaches tell me this all my life. And you know, even in college, there's coaches like, oh Dan, you're tilted to the side a little bit. And you know, I didn't really know like the science behind it as much. But there was actually a study that I went on a couple of years ago, and it took the top 60 shooters in the NBA and WNBA. And what they found is that none of those players, so of the top 60 professional best shooters, right? So on this list, you'll have like the Klay Thompsons, you'll have like the Dinah Taurasis, you'll have Steph Curry, you know, Kevin, all those. None of them finished their shot with 10 toes to the rim. So you'll find, if you look at Klay Thompson, he starts a little more 10 toes to the rim, but as they finish, they have their, you know, if you think of it as like the shooting mechanism, right? So our shooting mechanism is our arm, right? So our shoulder, elbow, right? And then our follow through our finger pointing to the target, right? And so if you're thinking about where you finish, you're not going to finish with 10 toes pointing to the rim, because if you just comfortably raise your arm, right? I know, you know, there's some people at home who can't see us, but if you just like comfortably raise your arm up, it's not going to be straight in front of your body. And so you want to get to a point where when you comfortably raise your arm up, you know, you're finishing at a spot and you kind of look where your feet finish. And that's probably more of like the footprint that you would want to use for your shot, right? And as you would notice, like, it's not going to be 10 toes pointing to the rim. You're going to be slightly tilted. If you're right, you're going to be slightly tilted to the left. If you're left, you're going to be slightly tilted to the right. But I think that's something important, and it's going to be different for everyone, but I think that's something important for players to understand is like the 10 toes to the rim. I'm really not a big fan of that. I don't teach that. And I just try to find a footwork that's a little more comfortable, a little more natural for where the player is going to finish their shot.
I think what you're getting at right there is just natural. Like I'm a big believer. There's no picture perfect jump shot. It is what you can repeatedly do and what feel like, dude, you want to know what I think the biggest confidence to shooting is, Dan? I messed it up. What I think the biggest point is to shooting is confidence. I think that is the number one thing in to be a great shooter. So I would say if you're a little more confident with your toes, you know, at say 10 degrees to the left, I don't think it's going to make that big of a difference either. I'm so with you. And a lot of it is also aiming that dominant hip to the rim. A lot of times, like if you're a right-hand shooter, your right hip kind of turns towards the rim. And yeah, I'm just with you. I don't know where exactly that philosophy came from. And I don't necessarily also think it's like fully wrong. I think if really young players begin with a 10 toes to the rim and learn how to get a little square to the rim, it is a helpful foundational piece. But especially as you get stronger, it's rare that you're just that squared up and you're that perfect in a game. And again, I messed it up. I gave my answer away too early, but I think confidence is the number one key to being a great shooter, believing that that shot is going to go in whether you made or missed the last one. And if a slight hip turn, if a slight 10 toes out to the side is more comfortable, makes you feel more fluid, more natural, I would absolutely advise going that route.
Yeah, no, honestly, I really agree with that because, you know, and because confidence comes from, in my mind, confidence comes from two things, and it's your preparation and then kind of like how you feel and what you're thinking. And so, you know, even as you say that, like if you feel good, it's probably going to help you feel more confident, right? If I'm going, let's say I'm going to a wedding and I'm dressed up nice and I really like my suit, I picked it out very specific for that wedding.
You're feeling good.
If I feel good, I'm going to be confident as I'm going there, and I'm going to feel, you know, more energetic, more enthusiastic as I'm interacting with people there. So, you know, same thing with your shot. Like if I got 10 toes to the rim, it doesn't feel comfortable, I'm not going to feel as confident, right? So I got to get to a place where it starts to feel more comfortable so that I'm more confident that it's going to go in the basket.
Again, you know, I think what we're saying here is there are some things that are important for shooters to do. Having a good foundation, that's different than being 10 toes to the rim. Having those feet with a good base widespread under you to generate good strength is important. Your footwork, whether it's left, right, or right, left, can be make or break if you don't use the proper footwork stepping right into a shot. Getting your follow through up high matters. Having some arc under that ball matters. I do think getting the shooting elbow relatively under the basketball matters. You don't want to see that shooting elbow way, way out to the side. You're probably going to lose a lot of arc, I think, at least. Dan, where are you at on the dominant shooting elbow?
Yeah, so no, I think a good place to be is, you know, kind of getting the crease of your arm above your elbow. There's actually, I'm not sure if I'm giving too much information away from what they're doing, but there's actually this great app that's out now. It's the NOAA shooting app, and there's a partnership that we have in PGC with NOAA, the NOAA Hoops app. And what it does is, I think arc, when it comes to the, like more the mechanics of the shot, that might be the most important thing. And what they found is that having a shot, you know, 45 degrees, plus or minus 2 degrees, is like the ideal shot, right? The shooters where of the 300 million shots that they've tracked, that's like the, you know, the shot angle you wanna have. And so, yeah, like you were saying, if your arm's too far flat, you know, it's probably gonna be a much shorter angle, like 37 degrees. And if it's too high up, you know, it's probably gonna be more like 55, 60. Yep. And it's getting to the place where you can consistently, you know, get in. The NOAA Hoops app does a great job because it actually tracks the arc of your shot to give you immediate feedback. Have you used that?
I have not used it. I'm very familiar with it. Okay. I've been in a lot of college gyms where they have the NOAA system kind of in the gym. And I think, I mean, you know, it's just a data feedback tool. That's all it is. It's eyes. It's me and you, Dan. It's an automated me and you. It, when NOAA's not there, it's you and me standing telling an athlete, hey, this release was too low. You can see in the arc. So yeah, I'm a big fan. And for listeners out there, if you can get a hold of it, I think that is a great way for you to be able to kind of track. I think, Dan, I'll kind of present my last point of shooting. Because it's so in line with what you said, I am a big fan of paying attention to the pattern of your misses. If you don't have NOAA, I think watching your misses can give you your data feedback. So I tell a lot of the athletes I work with, if you miss in the same spot three times in a row in a workout, why is that happening? If you're consistently missing left rim, okay, maybe your follow through is falling to the left. Maybe your toes are actually turned too far to the left. Maybe you are twisting too far. So I think for players out there who maybe couldn't get a hold of that, I don't know if you've ever thought or used that at all, but I think out there, if you watch the pattern of your misses, if you are consistently missing short, it's going to tell you something. It doesn't mean there's a 100% perfect answer. It might be that you're not getting enough power from low body. It might be that your follow through is not high enough. But I think players out there, just next time you go get shots up, look where you're most often missing. And it's going to tell you something that you're doing wrong.
Yeah. And so just real quick to reference the NOAA Hoops app, there's actually a free app now that they have that pretty much all players can access if, you know, anyone is interested. But perfect. Again, if you're not using that, you know, so like you just said, when someone's shooting, you know, you should be paying attention to where your misses are. And that's something, again, that my high school coach did a great job at talking to me about. And I'm not a coach, and I know I've had a lot of coaches where, you know, it's, oh, if you're missing short, you just got to use more legs. And I can remember shooting. It's like legs, more legs, more legs, more legs. And to me, I don't know, that didn't necessarily always make sense, right? And so ultimately, like, I think it could be a couple different things. Like, yeah, sure, it might be legs. But, you know, maybe if you're missing left, maybe you just need to move your tilt a little bit. Maybe you're too much tension to those to the rim. And so ultimately, I think it's no one will know better what needs to change in your shot than you as a player, right? And you'll know better the more reps that you get, right? So for me, you know, when I work with kids, it's not like I look at their shot and I know exactly like, oh no, it's definitely this. Sometimes I have a good idea, but ultimately no one's gonna know what needs to change in your shot more than you. And it's about getting those reps so that you feel comfortable. I know, like for me personally, and it may not make sense, but for me, when I start missing short, it's usually because I'm a little bit too much 10 toes to the rim, right? And I need to give a little more tilt. And the reason why that even affects it is by just turning a little bit to the left is I end up getting more power generation, and it helps me get the shot from being short into more of a longer distance shot. And so, yeah, no, it's just about understanding and then, you know, messing and working with what works best for you. I think, you know, you kind of got to view the training sessions, you got to view your practice, your individual workouts as like a laboratory, and you got to experiment. All right, hey,
I'm all about that.
Let me mess with this, see if it works. And if it doesn't work, try something different, right? And ultimately, you know, I've said it so many times, but you got to figure out by just putting in the reps in and you'll be able to figure out what it is that your shot needs.
You're kind of making me mad because that was exactly what I was about to say. I was about to say, okay, well, Dan, we're gonna loop in this conversation with exactly what you just said. Like, rounding off the shooting topic, you said you got to kind of figure out what works for you. And there's only one way you're going to do that: reps, right? That's what you just said right there at the end, reps. That's how you're going to figure these things out. It goes back to where we started the convo. The best shooters out there get up the most shots. They're in the gym consistently figuring out what does work for me, what footwork is better for me. Because if you're confident and you've got good mechanics, you've got a good base of what you should be doing with confidence, that's when you start really knocking down shots at a high clip. The top three skills for youth players to focus on: dribbling, passing, and shooting. It seems simple, but there are details into each of those. We've covered all of them heavily. We've talked longer than I had planned, but I do not mind it, Dan, because bouncing these ideas back and forth is what is really the fun of this. And I think I speak for you in this training world. I think it's a lot about us kind of coming together and expressing different philosophies and finding balance. I don't think there's any one perfect way to train. I think there's a lot of ways you can get better. You got to find out those ways that work best for you. Dan, do you have any final thoughts on these top three skills before we roll today?
No, I don't think so. I think that was pretty much it, you know, and even just something that came to mind as you were just finishing, this might be more for coaches as well. But even for players, it's like, you know, where I'm at today. So we talked about dribble, pass, shoot, and I kind of shared some different philosophies and different training things that I use, you know, currently, but you know, that's where I'm at today. And, you know, maybe 5 years from now, I look back and I'm like, ah, like, I don't know why I was doing it that way. And again, that's what I'm trying to provide for players is I'm at a place where I went through and I did, you know, training on dribbling, passing and shooting. And there were some things that I did that really worked, but there was also things that, you know, ended up kind of wasting time. And so I want to help players be as efficient with their workouts, with their training as possible so that, you know, hey, maybe for me as a Division III player, maybe if I have someone to guide me and give me that direction, give me that roadmap, maybe I could have, you know, went and been, you know, a scholarship player, you know, at another level or, you know, whatever it might be. So I'm just helping, trying to help players, you know, get to and kind of reach, you know, the goals and aspirations that they have by providing information that might help them.
Dan, if I had heard this podcast in the sixth grade, I would have played for Coach K. 100% would have made it to Duke. I know it. It would have been the info I needed. No, I'm just joking. But
you would, actually jump college and went straight to the NBA.
You're right. You're right. If only I could dribble, pass, and shoot. I told you all I could do was shoot. But no, Dan, that was awesome, man. It was a pleasure. I really hope a lot of people out there listening, whether you're a coach, player, or parent, there's something to take away there. Parents kind of, you know, providing this information to your players. Coaches, you know, taking some of this. Socks. Socks was a big one that stuck out here today, taking these with you. So for our audience out there, please go follow us on social media at Pro Skills Basketball on Instagram and Facebook, and at Pro Skills B-Ball on Twitter. On our social media accounts, you'll be able to kind of stay up to date with all of the latest content we have coming out. Dan, we are going to sign off for the day. Really appreciate you jumping on here today. And hey, let's go take over San Diego, okay?
Yeah, no, I'm excited to.
Awesome. Thank you, Dan.
All right, thank you.